Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined now by Jan LaRue. She's chief counsel for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk a bit about the battle over the nomination of Janice Rogers Brown, President Bush's nomination for the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. Jan, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you so much, Todd. It's good to be with you again.
Tell us a little bit about Janice Rogers Brown.
This is an extremely good candidate for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. She is the first African-American woman appointed to the California Supreme Court, and her record clearly demonstrates that she understands her limited role as a judge. She has the utmost respect for the legislature, for correctly interpreting the Constitution, and not writing law from the bench.
So tell us, what's the problem?
Well, it appears that she has moved off the plantation, so to speak, that is dominated by white guilty liberals, and the black leadership of the left that is entirely out of touch with black Americans. She is a conservative, and so that, they say, alone should disqualify her from serving on the court.
And who exactly is opposing her?
Well, the as I said, the liberal white senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee, who are dominated by special interest groups, the abortion lobby and feminists that are out of touch with most American women, and also the Congressional Black Caucus. There have been absolutely abhorrent racist attacks against this woman. A cartoon was displayed in the hearing yesterday that depicts her in the most unattractive way and puts her instead as to the right of Clarence Thomas, for example.
Where does Judge Brown stand on issues like abortion, for example?
We do not know her personal opinion, and that is irrelevant. What we do know is that in the case in California, deciding whether or not there would be a requirement of parental consent before a minor could have an abortion, Justice Brown was the lone dissenter, as well she should have been, because the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court granted a rehearing in the case after the balance on the court had shifted to being very liberal. A prior Supreme Court under Chief Justice Malcolm Lewis had upheld the parental consent law because it was perfectly consistent with United States Supreme Court rulings. And so Justice Brown, when the case was reheard, was the lone dissenter, and she was right.
We talked recently with Douglas Kamik of Pepperdine University. He had written publicly about what he calls a stealth filibuster that is being, well, it started with Judge Miguel Estrada, of course, that the Senate is now allowing to take place with most of President Bush's judicial nominees, especially those for the higher levels of the courts. What's going on in the U.S. Senate?
What is going on is the wrongful use of a filibuster that has historically been limited to debate over legislation and never over judicial nominees until this time, because the liberal left senators know that if they allow an up or down vote on these nominees, they will lose. And so they use this obstructionist tactic, which shows nothing but contempt for the Constitution and their limited role as senators to advise and consent on nominees, to stop the majority from voting. You know, even with Miguel Estrada, the vote to invoke cloture and end filibusters was at least 55 votes in all seven times. And so that is clearly, you know, four more than the majority needed for an up or down vote.
What can be done against this stealth filibuster?
The Senate leadership, Bill Frist and company, need to amend the Senate rules so that all that is needed to invoke cloture and end this stealth filibuster would be a simple majority of 51 votes. The Senate has the authority over its own rules. Constitution makes that clear. Court opinions make that clear. They have amended the rule in the past. The cloture vote used to require 67 votes, and then they lowered it to 60. And now they should lower it to 51 and end this obstructionist nonsense.
Tell me what this is about. I'm reading from a Nayrol Pro-Choice America press release. It says this. Nayrol Pro-Choice America, the leading national advocate of privacy and women's rights to choose, today raised concerns about President Bush's nomination of California Supreme Court Justice Janice Rogers Brown to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit because of her demonstrated hostility to the constitutional right to privacy. What are they saying?
Well, those are the buzzwords for them to communicate that they think she is pro-life. And as I said, all that we know about her, Justice Brown's personal opinion on abortion, is her dissenting opinion in the parental consent case, which is perfectly consistent with Supreme Court precedent. But Nayrol and Now and Planned Parenthood are so absolutely radical that if they think there is the slightest chance that someone might actually uphold the Constitution and vote the right way in anything touching on abortion, they're vehemently opposed to that nominee.
So they are extrapolating.
Of course
from,
they are.
From a decision.
They're lying most of the time.
Does someone who says, look, I simply want parents to have either consent or to be informed when a minor child is to receive an abortion, does that person, be they a judge or not, run afoul of the Constitution's guarantee of privacy?
Absolutely not. As you know, the Constitution neither mentions a right of privacy and certainly not a right of an abortion. U.S. Supreme Court created that right back in 1973, made it up out of whole cloth, but in 1992, in the case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the court clearly upheld the right of a state to require either parental consent or parental notice in the case of a minor pursuing an abortion, as long as the statute provides for a judicial bypass in those circumstances where it is not feasible for a minor to approach her parents. That is exactly what the California statute provided. As I mentioned, the first Supreme Court that ruled on it upheld the law, and then Ronald George became Chief Justice in California, who is a flaming pro-abort, granted a rehearing in the case, and his court struck it down.
How much of the opposition to Judge Brown do you think stems from the fact that she is at least in the on one of the long lists for a possible Supreme Court nomination in the future?
Well, they are especially concerned about nominees to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals because that court historically has been tapped for nominees to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's why the liberals were so opposed to Miguel Estrada, because it was perceived that he would then be on a short list to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's what's perceived about Justice Brown.
If President Bush loses the White House at the next election, and we have a Democratic president, and that president puts forward judicial nominees that at least ideologically are unacceptable to Concerned Women for America, would Concerned Women for America support a filibuster against those nominees in the Senate?
What we would support would be a searching inquiry in the Senate Judiciary Committee into the background of the nominee, as is proper, looking at opinions, looking at statements, inquiring into the person's judicial philosophy. We are opposed to litmus tests. What we want in judges is a proper respect for the limited role, the separation of powers that our Constitution requires, and a judicial philosophy that says, I'm a judge, I don't write law, I interpret law. The use of a filibuster would against a nominee is not something that we support. We believe that after a hearing, if a nominee is voted out of the committee to the Senate floor, then it should be, we would do all that we could if we felt the candidate was not qualified to be a federal judge, to encourage senators to oppose the nomination, but do so on an up or down vote.
Then, apart from what Concerned Women for America would support in that case, do you think the cat is out of the bag? I mean, the precedent now has been set for a filibuster of judicial nominees in the Senate.
Well, that's very tempting, but, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. I it is my opinion that the use of a filibuster here when the majority is ready to vote is the wrong thing to do, and it's disrespectful to the Constitution and the limited role of the Senate.
Miguel Estrada eventually dropped out. He simply could not take, personally, I think familiarly, the pressure that was being put upon him in that position as a nominee who was stuck in limbo.
Yeah, for 2 years.
What are the prospects for Judge Janice Rogers Brown?
Well, Chuck Schumer, the liberal senator from New York, yesterday already said he was going to urge his colleagues to filibuster her nomination. And there is absolutely no reason to do this. They have no justification. She answered their questions at the hearing. There is as far as I know, all of her paperwork has been filed. Everything that's been asked for has been presented. And so it's time for an up or down vote. So they were effective in using this stealth obstructionist filibuster against Miguel Estrada and Priscilla Owen. They've threatened they've done it against Bill Pryor. They've threatened to do it against Pickering and his second nomination. And now this wonderful woman who should be on the court. So there's just no telling. The Republican leadership has to play hardball with a hardball bat and change the rule and stop this nonsense.
From the president's perspective, is the only way he is going to have his nominees, most of them, make it into the higher courts is by exercising the recess appointment?
Again, it would be very tempting to do, but that would violate the Constitution as well, and it would only be a temporary solution. The Constitution says that a recess appointment has to occur if the vacancy occurred during a recess. So this is not the case here.
And finally, as a broader strategy, it appears, if I'm a prospect, I know that people are looking at me as a possible judicial nominee under the Bush administration, I'm going to be a little scared off. Do I want to go through this? Do I want to walk the path that Miguel Estrada has walked or that Janice Rogers Brown has walked? I might say no when the president comes calling.
That would be very tempting. It would be a wonderful honor to be nominated by the President of the United States to a federal court. However, the process has turned into nothing but a lynch mob. These tactics are deplorable. The kind of inquiry that goes into the background of an individual here, it would dissuade anyone from wanting to suffer through the ordeal. And that's what the liberals are trying to do. They're trying to dissuade qualified people who have received the highest rating from even the American Bar Association, which is very liberal, no matter if they have the endorsement from, bipartisan folks, from ever agreeing to being considered.
Jan LaRue, Chief Counsel for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Jan, thanks for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Always a pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Now, you heard her, folks. She said two wrongs don't make a right. The end does not justify the means. If the opposition to the president's judicial nominations is taking the form of this stealth, this well, it's what Kamik has called this stealth filibuster. It is a filibuster technically, but it's a filibuster that is permitted under current Senate rules, which doesn't really require any filibustering. It just requires keeping the question open and never allowing a vote of cloture, in effect raising the requirement for, in this case, a judicial nominee's approval from a simple majority to a supermajority, from 1 over 50 to over 60 votes. Now, if it's wrong for the opposition and those opposing the nominees of President George W. Bush to engage in this kind of unprecedented filibustering of judicial nominees, and I think it is, the rule needs to be changed. If it's wrong, I would hope that when the time comes, and I think it will come, politicians are the ultimate opportunist, when the time comes, and it will come, that there is a Democratic president who is putting up an unacceptable judicial nominee, and a Republican Senate decides, look, we've got to stop this. I would hope that when the time comes, they don't follow the precedent being set by the opponents of President George W. Bush and his judicial nominees. Two wrongs don't make a right. If it's wrong for them to filibuster George W. Bush's nominees, then it would be wrong for us to filibuster a Democratic president's nominees. The remainder of the program today is open lines for your questions and your comments. Anything you want to talk about, if you'd like to react to the conversation with Jan LaRue or the first hour's conversation with Pastor Sean Rippey on historic versus contemporary worship, feel free to do that as well. I've got a few things to share with you. In particular, a story that we were talking about yesterday. A new wrinkle has emerged, a new reaction, if you will, to Lieutenant General William Boykin. Of course, we talked about him yesterday. You will remember that he was much in the news for telling evangelical Christian audiences that God was on the side of America's war on terrorism and suggesting that Muslims worship an idol. These comments were made back in June, but they were reported only recently on NBC News this week. Well, there's been nothing but flap about this ever since, right? You may have read the story about two of the Democratic presidential candidates, or hopeful candidates, reacting and condemning the words of General Boykin. One of them was Senator John Kerry. The other, Joseph Lieberman. Joseph Lieberman has been quoted in the press as saying that the war on terror is a war with terrorists and not on religion. And I think he's right there, and the president agrees with him. But Senator Lieberman has also said that General Boykin's comments have needlessly offended Muslims.
In the longer term, we're going to win the war on terrorism by winning a battle for the hearts and minds of the Islamic world. The majority of Muslims in the world who are not fanatics, who are not violent, who are not extremists, but who want to live a better, freer life and want some respect. And those kinds of comments from a high-ranking official in this Pentagon, this administration, obviously were just the opposite. They were deeply divisive and wrong.
And now Senator Lieberman has a point, doesn't he? He's got a point that, and I made this yesterday, in terms of keeping the rhetoric down and not complicating things, not throwing monkey wrenches into an already unbelievably complex problem that is the war on terrorism, it is prudent that the generals, whatever their views may be, confine their public comments to the things that they've been called by their nation to do. So he's got a point. Now, did you hear what Senator Lieberman had to say? He said that General Boykin's comments offended Muslims. And they may well have. I think we're getting the evidence that they have. But here's my question for you. Senator Lieberman would like to be president of the United States. He's running for president of the United States. Senator Lieberman is Jewish. Nothing wrong with being Jewish. But if the comments of a mid-level general about the nature of Islam offends Muslims, what do you think having a Jewish president of the United States will do among worldwide Islam? Will a Jewish president upset Muslims? That's my question for you. Give me a call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your answer to that question. Now, here's how Senator Lieberman answered the question.
As president, I'm confident that I'm going to be judged in the world, including in the Arab and Islamic world, by my policies, not by my faith.
Do you agree that Senator Lieberman, with him, when he says, look, the Muslim world won't be repelled by a Jewish president? Whatever his prospects may be, he would and would like to be the first Jewish president of the United States. Being Jewish in the geopolitical world in which we live right now is, one might argue, a liability. Already the Muslims are nervous enough about the alliance between Israel and America. What do you think a Jewish president would do to their level of nervousness? Do you agree with Senator Lieberman that they'll simply be objectively judging him on his ideas and not on his faith? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I have not heard anyone ask this question yet, and I find it telling that no one is asking the question. We say, look, we got a real problem with George W. Bush because he's an evangelical, and he's president of the United States. And worldwide Islam finds nothing more offensive than a Christian evangelical as president of the United States. And he's misstepped a few times and talked about crusades, and he's got a general there who is spouting off here and there, and people are saying it's only making things worse. Would electing a Jewish president have the same effect? Finally, candidate Joseph Lieberman says that Islamic radicals will hate a U.S. president regardless of his faith.
The fanatics, the extremist, Al-Qaeda, doesn't care whether the president of the United States is Christian, Jewish, Hindu, or even Muslim, but different from their vision of Islam. They hate us all.
Now, I want your answer to that question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If it's offensive to Muslims to have a Christian president, what would a Jewish president do? And Joseph Lieberman has been very outspoken about his faith. He says he takes his faith very seriously. His faith, Judaism. Give me a call during this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sooner or later, the question will have to be answered, I think. And I'm amazed that we're actually less than, we're barely a year from making a decision about this, and now the question has come up. When we come back from this break, we've heard from Joseph Lieberman, the would-be statesman, the would-be president on this issue. When we come back, we'll hear from Joseph Lieberman, the theologian. He criticizes the good general for waxing theological in his comments. We'll find out what theology is at work when Joseph Lieberman waxes theological. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines, Issues, etc. For the remainder of the program, stay with us. Give us a call during this break.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Do you know God's will for your daily life? Is God's will a mystery? Do we need to look for a sign from God to know what to do at any given moment? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal titled Locus and Focus, God's Will for Your Daily Life. The recent issue also contains a review of Armageddon, the latest in the Left Behind series, and Aaron Wolf details his spiritual journey to the Reformation from the legalism of evangelicalism. His article is titled, A Beggar on the Wittenberg Trail. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources. You can receive the next edition of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172, or write Issues Etc. Journal, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. A decorated lieutenant general is in trouble for remarks about Islam and Christianity. He's a strong evangelical Christian, and that may explain some of the heat he's taking. Keith Peters has the story.
The media have stirred up a firestorm of criticism against Lieutenant General William G. Boykin. The general is quoted discussing a 1993 battle with a Muslim militia leader, saying, "I knew my God was bigger than his." American Values President Gary Bauer calls the media attack nothing more than persecution.
He talked about the war on terrorism in terms of good and evil, and made it clear that he believes God takes an active interest in the affairs of men on this earth. And those things, to the radical secularists, are sins. So there is an attempt to silence him and, by extension, to silence us all.
Senators John Warner and Carl Levin urged a probe into whether Boykin displayed, quote, inappropriate behavior. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins finds an interesting political irony going on here.
There's been more of a political reaction to that than the Muslim military individuals in Guantanamo Bay that have undermined national security. You would think that we would be more focused on national security than we would be political correctness.
General Boykin also said he knows why the September 11th attacks weren't even worse. He says the hand of God stopped two more airplanes from crashing into landmarks in this country. That statement set editorial writers at major newspapers into a frenzy. For Family News in Focus, I'm Keith Peters in Washington.
Christian leaders urge you to call your representatives and let them know you support General Boykin. Gary Bauer also suggests contacting the White House to tell the president that Christians stand by this war hero. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On the next Adventures in Odyssey, the road trip continues as Connie and Joanne make another stop.
I'd forgotten how beautiful West Virginia is this time of year.
But the peace doesn't last for long.
Be careful, Connie. That's a pretty fast current.
Joanne, it's called Gentle River Park. I don't think we're... Connie!
It's a wet and wild ride on the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Issues Etc. and Concordia Publishing House are excited about our Book of the Month for October, Lift High This Cross, The Theology of Martin Luther. Find out how God worked through this reformer to shape church and society. Lift High This Cross, published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book at issuesetc.org and click the What's New section, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's open lines for the remainder of Issues Etc. We're talking about we're picking up on something we were talking about yesterday. Lieutenant General William Boykin, of course, is in the news about comments that he had made this summer in several venues, most of them to Christian audiences, where he had talked about the war on terrorism in religious terms. He is a Christian, so he talks about the war on terrorism in terms of his God and their God. He has said that the Muslim worships an idol, that his God is bigger than their God, that his God is real, theirs is an idol, and that this is, and he said in earlier statements this summer, and this, of course, is getting reaction all over the place, that this is really a war kind of between Jesus and Satan. We're not going to win the war on terrorism unless we do it in the name of Jesus. And one can understand why that would upset people. One can understand it. You may agree or disagree. You can understand why it might be imprudent for a general, especially one deeply involved in the war on terrorism, to air his views this way and in those terms. Before the break, we heard from Senator Joseph Lieberman reacting to General Boykin. Lieberman said, look, the only way to make friends with the Muslim is to avoid this kind of rhetoric, and that these kinds of terms offend Muslims. I ask the question, and I think it's a legitimate question. Joe Lieberman would like to be president. He's running for president. if the statements of an evangelical Christian within the military of this nature would offend Muslims and exacerbate the problem with Islam, what would a Jewish president do? Now, I'm not asking what Joe Lieberman would do, per se. I'm asking, what would America, having a president who is of the faith of Judaism, do for the war on terrorism? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Or put in these terms, as I said before the break, we have an evangelical Christian who is president today, George W. Bush. People say that's a liability in the war on terrorism, especially because he's outspoken about his faith. Joe Lieberman has been outspoken about his faith as a Jew. If he is president, does that exacerbate our relations with worldwide Islam? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Now, General Boykins has been criticized legitimately or illegitimately for making theological statements, and one could say the general should stick to what generals are called by their nation to do, and that is deal with the facts in terms of the military strategy. And as George W. Bush says so often, strategery. That's fine. Let the generals do the general thing. They should not wax theological. But now we have Joe Lieberman, the theologian. And in the same breath that wherein he criticizes General Boykin for making theological statements outside the purview of his place as a general, here the statesman and would-be president, Joe Lieberman, also has theological statements. He says Jews, Christians, and Muslims are more alike than they are different.
We are truly all children of the same God and children of the same Father Abraham, and we're going to advance the cause of peace and victory in the war on terrorism by stressing what unites us across religious lines, not dividing us further, and therefore making more likely what the entire world should work together to avoid, which is a global theological conflict.
Does that sound like a theological statement to you? Now, General Boykin has made a theological statement when it comes to the war on terrorism. You may agree with it or disagree with it. Joseph Lieberman says that's not right for generals to do. That only makes things worse. And then he turns around, and at least to my ears, waxes theological. Boykin says the Muslim worships idols, and he gets in trouble for it. Joseph Lieberman says the Muslim and the Jew and the Christian, we all worship the same God. Where's the outrage for Senator Lieberman making a theological statement? Why is there no outrage when Senator Lieberman says, look, we're all children of the same God? And he even says, and I find this a difficult issue to understand, he says that the Jew, the Christian, and the Muslim are also all children of Abraham. Now, I know that in terms of lineage, you can make the case that the Arab Muslim and the Jew are both children of Abraham, one through Isaac, the other through Ishmael. But what about the Indonesian or Asian Muslims? And then he throws Christians into the mix, saying we're children of Abraham too. Well, certainly not in the same sense that Arabs and Jews are children of Abraham through a line of descent. The scripture does say Christians are children of Abraham by faith. Is that what Joe Lieberman is talking about? It sounds like a very theological statement to me. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. There's outrage with Boykin, and Joseph Lieberman, in criticizing Boykin, waxes theological himself. No outrage. Why not? Kathy's calling from St. Charles. Kathy, welcome to Issues Etc.
I've always found this issue difficult when there's this political correctness thing, and I noticed it a lot, and I don't know historically when it started up in our country, but I seem to really notice it under the Bill Clinton years. I guess to me it reminds me of communism in a form that if you're liberal and you're not saying, and you're saying, you know, something liberal, there's no outcry against it. If you're saying something that isn't considered liberal or isn't considered, like with these theological things that he was talking about, considered the more appropriate, I guess, way to look at things, where, you know, a melting pot of the world and everyone's on the same plane, and then those issues, you know, are not outcried against, like what you were saying. And it just bothers me, this political correctness thing, totally, the whole picture of that.
And, Kathy, I understand what you're saying there, and I understand, I want to be clear here that what Joseph Lieberman has said about all, you know, Christian Jews and Muslims all being children of the same God and all being children of the same Abraham, and that we should emphasize what we have in common rather than where we differ, that is a theological statement. If it is liberal, it is theologically liberal. It's
well,
not just liberal in
that sense.
I guess
he's making a statement. Now, some of the statement isn't necessarily, I mean, we should all talk about what we have in common as people. I mean, that's our issue with life issues and things like that. People with disabilities have more things in common with us than don't. But they only seem to bring these commonalities up when it behooves them politically. And it just seems like it's just not a correct statement that he's making any more, in a political arena than it was the general. I mean, I much more agree with what the general was saying, but I don't know if he should have said it in a political realm.
One question before I let you go, Kathy. What do you think? Joe Lieberman would like to be president. Do you think that if the comments of an evangelical Christian general makes the war on terrorism harder, do you think having a Jewish president would make the war on terrorism harder?
Well, I think as an American, I think we should vote for who we think is the best president, whether they're Jew, you know, Arab.
But I'm not asking about why you would vote for them. I'm asking about the end result.
Well, I think the end result, I don't think you could make the Arabs happy unless you vote, you know, for their particular brand of whoever they would want to rule their country. I don't think you're ever going to make them happy. They fight amongst themselves. You can't make them all happy.
Kathy, thank you for the call. What about the rest of you? Do you think that having a Jewish president, Joe Lieberman's, I don't know what his prospects are, but we're so early in the process, it's difficult for anyone to say he'll not be president. If he were, he was almost vice president, wasn't he? Just very nearly vice president. And there's nothing wrong with being Jewish, but you know, Muslims, especially the radical element of Islam, take a very dim view of the Jews. If it's offensive to them that we have a Christian president, what would having a Jewish president do? A question I haven't heard asked, I'd like your answer to it. 505-780-1800-730-2727. Joe Lieberman says, no, I'll be judged on my ideas. But part of his ideas, he's told us that his ideas are shaped and formed by his faith. He said this many times. Just as George W. Bush has said that his ideas, his beliefs, even those that he exercises as president, are shaped and informed by his faith. What do you think the average Muslim out in, let's just take Iran or Saudi Arabia, what do you think they're going to hear when they hear a Jewish president say, I value my faith, in the same way that George W. Bush says this quite often? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Would a Jewish president incite more Muslims to violence against the United States, do you think? Keith is calling from his car. Keith, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Pastor.
Hey.
I think that having a Jewish president would be offensive to Islam, especially the ones that truly follow their religion, because they feel that their seed was passed down through Ishmael, not Isaac, where the Jew would feel that way. So I think it definitely would cause some conflict.
And what do you make of Joe Lieberman's theological statements? Why do you think there's a lack of outrage when Joe Lieberman makes statements like we're all children of the same God, and yet at the same time he's faulting General Boykin for taking kind of the different end of the spectrum view, which is the Christian and the Muslim are worshiping two different gods, one is true, one is false?
I don't know if it has anything to do with postmodernism, but I think a lot of people might actually feel that way, that one God is the God of all three religions.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. Where I mean, the Christian knows the truth, but that just making a statement like that, he kind of covers ground with everybody in the political realm. I don't know why there isn't an outcry. It's kind of offensive to me, but I don't know.
Keith, thank you very much for the call. Those are the two questions. The Jewish president question. Would having a Jewish president incite more violence from radical Muslims against the United States? And Joe Lieberman says the general should stick to matters military and leave his theology at home. And then in the next breath, he says something very theological, that Christians, Jews, and Muslims are all children of the same God and children of the same Abraham. And that we ought to be emphasizing what we have in common rather than what separates us. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's put it this way. If George W. Bush said, we're all children of the same God, and we're all children of the same Abraham, most people would say, the president should stick to presidential things and leave his theology in the residence of the White House or down in Crawford. The press would certainly say that. Or would they? Would they? Are we faced with a situation where there is a theology that people are happy to hear? Now, if George W. Bush said, look, I think Islam is a religion of peace. I think it's a religion, and most of its adherents are by and large peace-loving people. But as a Christian, I have to say we don't worship the same God. He would be pilloried. They'd say, there he goes, General Boykin all over again. And yet Joseph Lieberman can say, we're all just children of the same God. And people yawn, or perhaps by their silence, approve. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Ida's calling from East St. Louis. Ida, welcome.
I have a question on faith. And this question is, are we speaking of faith in Jesus Christ, or are we speaking in faith in God? Is that different? I just want to know, because I know there are some Christians who do not believe in the resurrected Christ. And I wonder, it's in my mind, how can we have faith and not have it in Jesus? And I want to know if there is another faith. That's my question.
Oh, I see your question, Ida. Thank you very much. Now, that's good. That's good. I'm glad someone raised that. Because we often, in a loose way, talk about various faiths. The Islamic faith. You know, that's really an inaccurate way of talking about other religions. I mean, from a Christian perspective, there is but one faith. I think the Bible says that someplace. One faith. There are certainly false faiths. Has the Muslim put his faith, such as it is, falsely in a false God? Yes. So we could talk about the true faith and false faiths. But there we've got faiths in quotation marks, don't we? So you're right to raise the question. It's kind of a loose way we talk about religions. But then again, the term religion also has a bit of a stigma to it, because there are some Christians who don't think that they're practitioners of a religion. Religion is a dirty word to them, even though James actually uses the term to describe Christianity. He says true religion is to care for the poor and the widow. And he's talking about Christianity. So it's not a dirty word. There's hardly a term you can use. Religion is about as general as you can. Faith, there's still a problem there, because, of course, we Christians believe, and rightly so, that there is but one faith. All others are not faiths, but false faiths. So it's a good question, Ida. John Shelby Spong agrees with Joe Lieberman. He claims to be a Christian. And again, when you talk about John Shelby Spong, former bishop of Newark in the Episcopal Church USA, you always use the term Christian in gigantic quotation marks. He's the guy who wrote the book, you remember? Why Christianity Must Change or Die. He's out on the far end of a continuum of people who believe that Christianity is defunct. Some of them are closer to the Christian pale. They just think Christianity's got to change or die, and they don't mean what John Shelby Spong means. But they're on the same continuum with John Shelby Spong. John Shelby Spong is just a little braver, and he says Christianity's got to go or die, in essence. And he's written recently, in answer to a question from one Pauline in Oxford, what is the relationship between Christianity and other religions? You know, this is actually the question that Joe Lieberman is answering when he says we're all children of the same God and children of the same Abraham. Here's what Spong says. I don't think Joe Lieberman would have too much trouble with this. The great religions of the world have codified an eternal quest for meaning, for self-consciousness, into systems of thought that now dominate the various regions of the world. Christianity is primarily the religion of the Western world and those areas that have been colonized by Western powers. Islam is the religion of the Middle East, stretching into Africa in the West and Indonesia in the East. Hinduism and its child Buddhism dominate the religious landscape of the East. And so far, I mean, I guess from a sociological standpoint, you can't fault anything that Spong is saying there. But he goes on, there are clearly many divisions inside each of these religious traditions. Conflict arises in the world of religion when, and listen carefully, sounds like Joe Lieberman's been taking his theological advice from John Shelby Spong. Conflict arises in the world of religion. And remember that Lieberman said what he said we all fear the most, a worldwide theological conflict. Just as a footnote, folks, we've already got one. And it's not called the War on Terrorism. It's been with us from the foundation of the world. But be that as it may, Spong says conflict arises in the world of religion when any system, that is any one religion, decides that it has captured the ultimate truth of God and therefore all other systems are defective or subject to conversion. He writes, I honor the pathway that Christianity has offered me since it enables me to walk into the wonder of God, whatever that means. This does not mean, however, that I am somehow incapable of also honoring the pathway that others walk. If we believe that God is one, and here is the biggest leap of logic I have ever seen. Sad to say, a lot of Christian theologians are making the same leap with John Shelby Spong. If we believe that God is one, then all pathways to God are, in the last analysis, journeys toward the same goal. I'll come back to that in a minute. Spong concludes, I intend to live within my faith tradition as deeply as I can. But that doesn't mean that I will never allow my devotion to God I meet in Christ to be used to denigrate any religious system different from my own. I hope that religious maturity might soon lead us all in this direction. This is a theme, a bell that has sounded by John Shelby Spong for decades now. He's not letting up. That it's fine for you to be a Christian, but that doesn't mean that anyone else is wrong. He is kind of the ultimate postmodern theologian. Yeah, I call myself a Christian, but that's really potato-potato. We're all really on the same road to one God. Joe Lieberman seems to agree. We're all children of the same Father. We're all children of the same Abraham. I don't know how he gets there, but he does. And then he says, we need to be emphasizing where we agree rather than where we disagree. Now, that becomes a bit of a problem if you get outside the respectable religions, doesn't it? Like, if you get into the realm of Wicca, or shamanism, or voodoo. As long as you stay within the room that is respectable religions like Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and more recently we've allowed in Buddhism and Hinduism. The New Age movement has come along for the ride. Those are all respectable religions. But how do we arrive at any semblance of peace when what we emphasize is where we agree and ignore where we disagree? Now, I mentioned the leap in logic that Spong and others are making, and here he says it again. If we all believe that God is one, then all pathways to God are, in the last analysis, journey toward the same goal. Let's see if that works in just terms of that we can understand in everyday life, okay? There's one city named St. Louis, isn't there? There's one city in the United States named St. Louis. And for the sake of argument, there may be others, but let's just say for the sake of argument, St. Louis is the only city in the United States named St. Louis. Does it therefore follow that any road you get on in the United States, any road you get on leads to St. Louis? Do the westbound lanes of Highway 44 out in Fenton lead to St. Louis? Anybody out there driving on the westbound lanes of Highway 44 out by Fenton, are you driving towards St. Louis? If you stayed on Highway 44 to its terminus, I don't know, where is that, Tulsa, someplace like that? Would you eventually arrive in St. Louis? You see, Spong's logic doesn't even work in everyday terms. And yet he says if there's only one God, then it follows logically that all roads lead to that God. Or I could put it in terms like this. Let's see. I have a wife. I have only one wife. And there is only one woman who is my wife. Only one. She has not been reproduced anywhere on the globe. She is a unique individual. There is only one wife of me. Does it then follow that any woman I sleep with is essentially, I just sleep with any woman, and I'm, since there is only one wife, all women eventually lead to my wife. So any woman I sleep with is somehow I'm showing my affection for my wife? Well, I mean, how will that work when I get home from one of these nights with other women? Honey, you don't understand. The reason I sleep with other women is because there's only one wife, and since I believe this so firmly, I believe that all women eventually lead to you. You think that's going to fly? So it does not follow that since there is only one God, and I do affirm this, and I think Christians do affirm it, there is only one God, that all roads lead to God. When we come back from this break, one more hour of open lines for your questions and your comments. Two questions I've put on the table if you're just tuning in. Joe Lieberman says, look, if he's elected president, it will not exacerbate the problems with the Muslim world or increase violence against Americans having a Jew as the president of the United States. Do you agree? And I ask, where is the outrage when, in criticizing the theological statements of General William Boykin, Joe Lieberman waxes theological himself? We'll be right back. Open Lines follows this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Call during the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.